This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Foundation, writing at Real Clear Politics about something from the 20th century that's here in the 21st. It's called the imposter syndrome. It exists. I remember talking about it when I was in my 30s. It worried me. Well, now that I'm in my 70s, it no longer worries me, but amazing, amazing. Peter, what is the imposter syndrome that used to worry me? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, simply put, the imposter syndrome these days is an affliction of professional people, a sense that you're not really qualified for the position you hold, and somehow, some way, your colleagues, your boss is going to discover that, a fear you're not really qualified. And it turns out, at least where I live in Washington, D.C., where I've lived for a couple of decades now, this affliction is found especially among professional women, a sense that they're imposters. And it's their job to prevent everybody around them from recognizing this. But also women believe that this imposter syndrome is holding them back, is preventing them from achieving the professional heights of which they're truly capable.
I read your column and immediately I rush to imagine what the solution is. And then it occurred to me that an imposter syndrome could also be presented as someone who is humble and graceful. Is that possible, Peter? We're looking at humility here, which is a virtue.
Well, as you know, John, I think that's right. In fact, my first introduction to imposter syndrome came in a conversation a long time ago with some very impressive and accomplished women in Washington, D.C., and the national security community, journalists, and the think tank world. And they were concerned that they really didn't know enough to be performing the tasks that they had been assigned. And somewhat rudely, I ventured the opinion that actually they were right. They didn't know enough. But I said, the main difference between you and your male colleagues who have got all the answers, speak confidently, take the best seats at the conference table, is that you all recognize that you could learn more languages, that you could know more history, that you could learn more if you're in foreign affairs, let's say, about the cultures, the peoples, the societies over which, concerning which you're making recommendations, that this is not an altogether bad sensibility to have, because you're right. There's a lot more to learn.
Peter, if this is something that is real in the world, the imposter syndrome, in other words, it actually is something that's weighing on people's minds, it would be male and female who have it as well, correct? It wouldn't just be limited to professional women in Washington.
Well, I think that's right. In fact, I've received several comments from the piece, from men or from the wives of men, very accomplished men. And the men tell me, or the wives of the men tell me, that the men or the husbands indeed suffer from this. And by the way, these men are like the women I spoke to, are highly accomplished men, but they've been scared at different parts of their career that they're just not going to measure up, that this time, with this new promotion, the company, the boss is going to discover that they're really not up to the task. Now, I want to be clear: this imposter syndrome can genuinely be disabling. We've spoken in this conversation about modesty, humility, and appreciation of limitations. It's possible to take this to an extreme and simply deny your talent and torment yourself with irrational fears. But there's oftentimes, I think, imposter syndrome is rooted in an appreciation that it's possible that the demands of the job require kinds of knowledge that you haven't fully acquired, or skills you haven't atoned, you haven't honed to the maximum, and so that there's plenty of room for improvement. And if you appreciate this and keep it in proportion, I think you can probably, with modesty, be even more effective than you might have been a big professional danger in Washington, D.C., arrogance.
In reading your column, I was reminded, we can only draw on our own experiences when we're younger. In my 30s, I was a novelist, a published novelist, and I found great reluctance in talking about it to people who said, what do you do? Why are you here? What are you doing next? Because there wasn't a desk somewhere with a title on it that I could sit behind. And I found in reading a column, that was a form of imposter syndrome. I didn't think I belonged. After all, who did I think I was? H.G. Wells? And what have I written lately? He wrote 80 novels. What can I do that? Does that sound like imposter syndrome to you?
It does, although it seems to me in that case, I would not call it really a syndrome in the sense that a novelist sets out, let's face it, on a more daring adventure. As you know, and in fact, as you commented to me, you can't. There's not a desk set aside in corporations for the office novelist. You're really taking a lot of chances. You're measuring yourself against some great figures, and it's reasonable to wonder whether you measure up. So I really don't want to call that at this point a syndrome. I want to call it a reasonable fear or reasonable anxiety, and then it becomes up to you whether you want to draw strength from this and strive to be the best you can be with your limitations, or allow yourself to be paralyzed by the achievements of others and your limitations.
So if you're actually sitting there, a deputy national security advisor, it would be a weight on you because you know the people who have gone before you. And that would hold you back or in some way inhibit your remarks. Is that what you experience?
Let's say it depends on the person. In light of the greatness of some of your predecessors, you could allow yourself to be paralyzed. But it seems to me, and having served not so long ago as the head of the policy planning staff in the State Department, and having had great predecessors, starting with the founder of the office, George Kennan, I think it's better to the extent possible, take inspiration from their achievements, all the while recognizing your limitations and doing your best within those limitations. But recognizing your limitations is not an easy matter.
Living up to George Kennan is just about comparable to living up to H.G. Wells, Peter. I think we've had the same experience.
Yes. Well, again, living up to, having George Kennan as a standard toward which one can strive, and recognizing though one inevitably falls short, that the striving itself makes one better.
I come back to humility. It sounds like a good thing in Washington. Is it? Is it admired, a humble person?
Generally not. And there is a lot of truth to what people say that, you need sharp elbows and you always have to have an eye on your back in Washington or in any place where the competition is tough. But I want to make the case for a certain humility as actually a source of strength. That is, knowing your limitations, know what you need to learn, enables you to reach out to other peoples, to ask the right questions, enables you to delegate, enables you to set reasonable goals. So a knowledge of one's limitations could be, if you want to put it this way, an important ingredient for success, even in Washington, D.C.
Peter Berkowitz is the Tad and Diane Taub Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution. He served, as Peter says, Director of Policy Planning Staff at the U.S. State Department. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.